On this fifth day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, text number 4. Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Apadam Bhavato Janma,
Aparam Bhavato Janma,
Padam Janma Vivasvataha,
Padam Janma Vivastita,
Katametan Vijaniyam,
Katametan Vijaniyam,
Tramado Proktavaniti,
Tramado Proktavaniti,
Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Apadam Bhavato Janma,
Aparam Bhavato Janma,
Padam Janma Vivasvataha,
Padam Janma Vivasvataha,
Katametad Vijaniyam,
Katametad Vijaniyam,
Tramadao Proktavaniti,
Tramadao Proktavaniti,
Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Apadam Bhavato Janma,
Aparam Bhavato Janma.
Arjuna said, "The sun god Vivasvan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed this science to him?" Purport. Arjuna is an accepted devotee of the Lord. So how could he not believe Krishna's words? The fact is that Arjuna is not inquiring for himself, but for those who do not believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or for the demons who do not like the idea that Krishna should be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For them only, Arjuna inquires on this point, as if he were himself not aware of the personality of Godhead or Krishna. As it will be evident from the 10th chapter, Arjuna knew perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of everything and the last word in transcendence. Of course, Krishna also appeared as the son of Devaki on this earth. How Krishna remained the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, the eternal original person, is very difficult for an ordinary man to understand. Therefore, to clarify this point, Arjuna put this question before Krishna so that he himself could speak authoritatively. That Krishna is the supreme authority is accepted by the whole world, not only at present, but from time immemorial. And the demons alone reject him. Anyway, since Krishna is the authority accepted by all, Arjuna put this question before him in order that Krishna would describe himself without being depicted by the demons, who always try to distort him in a way understandable to the demons and their followers. It is necessary that everyone, for his own interest, know the science of Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna himself speaks about himself, it is auspicious for all the worlds. To the demons, such explanations by Krishna himself may appear to be strange because the demons always study Krishna from their own standpoint. But those who are devotees heartily welcome the statements of Krishna when they are spoken by Krishna himself. The devotees will always worship such authoritative statements of Krishna because they are always eager to know more and more about him. The atheists, who consider Krishna an ordinary man, may in this way come to know that Krishna is superhuman, that he is Satchidananda Vigraha, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge, that he is transcendental, and that he is above the domination of the modes of material nature and above the influence of time and space. A devotee of Krishna, like Arjuna, is undoubtedly above any misunderstanding of the transcendental position of Krishna. Arjuna's putting this question before the Lord is simply an attempt by the devotee to defy the atheistic attitude of persons who consider Krishna to be an ordinary human being, subject to the modes of material nature. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, as we have studied in the first three verses of this chapter, Krishna is giving a little history of the Bhagavad Gita. When and why he spoke it, also. Why he's speaking it again, and the candidate to whom he's speaking it. As we have read, Krishna first instructed this science to the sun god, who gave it to his Vivasvan, who gave it to his son, Vaivasvata Manu, who in turn instructed to Ikshvaku on this earth, and it's come down since that time, many, many millions of years ago. But due to the force of time, the science has become distorted, and so Krishna feels the need to reiterate it as it is. And Arjun, what is it about Arjun? Why is he a fit candidate to hear this Bhagavad Gita, John? What are the two things that Krishna says here? He is a blank and also a blank. Alec?
He's a devotee and a dear friend.
Yeah. He is a devotee. Bhakto Sime Sakacheti. In the previous verse, text 3, we see the second line begins. Bhakto Sime Sakacheti, meaning you are my devotee and my friend, and therefore I am speaking this mystery, this mysterious science of Bhagavad Gita to you because you can understand it. Now Arjuna, as explained in the purport, asks a question in order to draw out from Krishna the details about his appearance, how he appears, why he appears. And so, as explained, Arjuna already knows these things, but he's asking Krishna, how could it be? From an ordinary point of view, it seems fantastic. Krishna is a contemporary of Arjuna, about the same age. And here he says he, you know, spoke to science 120 million years ago. So there needs to be some explanation. And Krishna will indeed explain that in the next verse. But you see how it is that the devotees, they make arrangements. The principle here is that they make arrangements for the science to be propagated. This was Srila Prabhupada's mission also. It's always the mission of the great devotees, is that they try to set up a situation that the message can be imparted to those who need it most. For instance, the writing of these books, you know, we have to realize that books are kind of a modern invention compared to our timeline. You know, before Vyasadeva wrote down the Vedas, there weren't any books. There wasn't a need for the books, because the it's hard to imagine with our, you know, scatterbrained condition. But to have such a clear mind that you could hear something once and remember it perfectly, so that you could then transmit it perfectly to a disciple or like that. So all the knowledge was passed down through sound, shabda brahman, spiritual sound. Now it's still being passed on in that way, but this invention of printing. I mean, even on the material history of Europe, the invention of movable type by Gutenberg was a revolution. And you know why? Because it made the Bible available to all. The Bible was the main book, but it was only available to the priests because they would copy the hand by hand. Do you ever see those illuminated manuscripts where they would, you know, make these elaborate drawings of one letter, you know, and it would take months just to make one book. So there obviously could not be a mass distribution of these books. And the fellow who started printing the Bible using Gutenberg's invention, he did it in secret. Eventually they caught him, and I think they martyred him, because he was making this available to the masses. It was thought to be a revolutionary act, and it was in that day. Now, similarly, this printing of these books, of course, now all kinds of things are printed. But this printing of books, this was first done on a mass scale by Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He saw the great facility that this provided for a mass dissemination of knowledge. I mean, how many people can you reach? And in those days, microphones were very rare. I just read an account in that nice biography by Bhakti Vikas Swami and Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava about his... there was this big meeting to decide, you know, whether the Vaishnavs who were born in lower families could really be Brahmins. You know, the difference between a Brahmin and a Vaishnav. There's this whole culture of smarta Brahmins. Smarta Brahmins means those who are caught up in the rules and regulations, and they're very into the birth. You know, you can't be a Brahmin unless you're born in a Brahmin family, even though they may not have the qualities of a Brahmin. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was too elderly to go to this great debate. You know, this was a big deal, because it had to do with the social status of the Vaishnavs and how they would be received in society and all this stuff. So Bhaktisiddhanta went there. Now there's no microphone. Not a microphone. It was like, you know, 1920 or something, or even earlier. He was a young man. And it doesn't mention that there was any, you know, amplification. But they had a huge crowd. Now you can imagine, you know, how quiet they had to be in order to hear from such a great distance. You know, I don't even know, maybe they had megaphones or something, you know. But, you know, in times gone by, they didn't have any books or notes or anything to read from. They knew everything. The Sutta Goswami, who speaks the Bhagavatam to the assembled sages at Naimisharanya. Why was he qualified? Because he was there when it was first spoken by Shukadev Tuparikit. That was the first time it was spoken. And he was there in the audience. He memorized the whole thing. All those verses we struggled to chant. You know, it's so hard to write them out accurately. You know, he memorized everything. It's inconceivable. The fifth canon with all that prose and everything. The clarity of mind, the quietude, you know, the ability to receive like that is just amazing. So, you can imagine, due to the force of time in this Kali Yuga, even before Kali Yuga, this is just before Kali Yuga starts, the science had been distorted because things were getting sketchy, as they say. Now, it's a new word, sketchy, due to the force of the advent of Kali. So Krishna, out of his compassion, he comes and he speaks this again. And now he's going to explain how it was that he spoke it then and he also spoke it now. And that there shouldn't be a wonder because he is different from us. He does not take birth due to the force of his karma. He's not forced to take birth. He always appears out of his own sweet will. And he does so in this world simply out of mercy. You know, what would he need to come here for? He's got the whole spiritual world with all the gopis and the gopas and everything there. And there's Vishnu Loka and Vaikuntha Loka. You know, this place is like a latrine compared to that, or worse. You know, why would he come? Because we're his children. You know? It's just like a father, he's living, the son is living nicely with the father and the mother and so forth. But something happens and he runs away from home and goes to San Francisco. You know, it happens all the time. So, father's always thinking, oh, what's going to, you know, maybe he'll call something, you know, and need some money, maybe, you know. And if there's an opportunity to reach out and inspire the son to come back, the father will always do it, you know. I mean, he's a good father. So similarly, we're all exiles. We all have wandered away from the loving embrace of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And we're mucking about in this material world for millions and millions of lifetimes. And so he's concerned. And so he periodically comes. He speaks Gita. He sends his emissaries. He shows by his example. He gives a demonstration. I read this in the fourth chapter of Adi Lila, very illuminating, at Chaitanya Charitamrita. How to renew the memory of his Lila on this earth, he comes once in a day of Brahma, you know, to reenact the replica of the spiritual world. I know. So, okay, so now they'll remember, you know, and show a demonstration of spontaneous devotion, which is what really attracts him. Not so much the official worship, but the spontaneous outpouring of love. It reminds me of a verse from Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the head of a whole sampradaya. He's got so much knowledge that it can't even stay in one head, he needs four heads. And he's got the fewest heads of all the Brahmas. There's so many universes, bigger universes. We're in the smallest universe. Only 4 billion miles wide. But the other Brahmas have many more heads. So all that knowledge, and he couldn't believe, you know, he was covered over by Krishna, but he doubted that this little boy with the flute and the yogurt and the fruit in his hand, you know, herding the calves, was actually his father and the source of everything and the Supreme Personality of God. So he tested him. You know, he put his coward friends and his calves in a like mystic slumber and hid them away, you know, for a year of our time, but for a moment of his time. So Krishna just expanded himself in all exactly the calves and exactly the boys, and he did many things at once. This is one of his qualities, expertise. Expertise means you can do a whole bunch of things at once, multitasking, and you don't make any mistakes. That's real expertise, you know. So first of all, he showed Brahma, you know, that his power was insignificant compared to Krishna's. But the other thing he did was that he gave the cowherd ladies and the cows a chance to suckle him. They didn't have that chance before. So their own boys and their own calves were actually Krishna. So when they're suckling them as they normally do, suddenly, you know, greater love is growing day by day because it's all Krishna. And they have this great opportunity, you know. So there's a verse, which unfortunately I forget the Sanskrit exactly. But it says, Oho ti danya rajagora manya stanya mitam pita mati bate moda. Forget the last half exactly. But it says, how fortunate are these mothers and cows of Vrindavan? Aho ti danya rajagora manya. The ladies and the cows of Raja. Because stanyamitam pitamativa demoda. With great joy, Krishna sucked the milk from their udders and from their breasts. Stanya amritam, nectarian milk. And then it says at the end, you know, taking the form of their calves and boys, Krishna did this, and all of the sacrifices since time immemorial, you know, the official sacrifices and the official worship of Vishnu and Lakshmi and of awe and reverence, does not satisfy him as much as drinking that milk. Because it was offered out of pure love. This is our sampradaya. So, similarly, Krishna gives a demonstration of that kind of devotion because it's unknown, you know, practically in this world. It's easily forgotten because it looks like ordinary, you know, human affairs, but it's not. So that's one of the reasons he comes, and he comes to speak this Bhagavad Gita. And now he's going to explain how it is that he could do that and millions and millions of years ago and speak the same thing to Arjuna, basically. You know, that there shouldn't be any cause of wonder, and he'll explain in the next couple of verses the mysteries of his appearance in this world, how and why he does it. Any questions on this verse? Text 4. All right. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. Bahuni me vatitani Janmani tavacharjana Tanyaham veda sarvani Natvam veta parantapa. The personality of God had said, many, many births, both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. Purport. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33, we have information of many, many incarnations of the Lord. It is stated there, Advaita Machuta Manadi Mananta Rupam Adyam Purana Purushan Nabayavanancha Vedeshu Durla Bhamadurla Bhamatma Bhakto Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, Krishna, who is the original person, absolute, infallible, without beginning. Although expanded into unlimited forms, he is still the same original, the oldest, and the person always appearing as a fresh youth. Such eternal, blissful, all-knowing forms of the Lord are usually not understood by even the best Vedic scholars, but they are always manifest to pure, unalloyed devotees. It is also stated in Brahma Samhita 5.39, Rama dimudha shikalani yamena tishtan nana avatana makarod bhumaneshu kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramak Pumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, or Krishna, who is always situated in various incarnations such as Rama, Nrsimha, and many sub-incarnations as well, but who is the original personality of Godhead known as Krishna and who incarnates personally also. In the Vedas also it is said that the Lord, although one without a second, manifests himself in innumerable forms. He is like the Vaidurya stone, which changes color yet still remains one. All those multiforms are understood by the pure unalloyed devotees, but not by a simple study of the Vedas. Vedeshu durlabham, a durlabham atma bhakta. Devotees like Arjuna are constant companions of the Lord. And whenever the Lord incarnates, the associate devotees also incarnate in order to serve the Lord in different capacities. Arjuna is one of these devotees, and in this verse it is understood that some millions of years ago, when Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vibhasvan, Arjuna, in a different capacity, was also present. But the difference between the Lord and Arjuna is that the Lord remembered the incident, whereas Arjuna could not remember. That is the difference between the part and parcel living entity and the Supreme Lord. Although Arjuna is addressed herein as the mighty hero who could subdue the enemies, he is unable to recall what had happened in his various past births. Therefore, a living entity, however great he may be in the material estimation, can never equal the Supreme Lord. Anyone who is a constant companion of the Lord is certainly a liberated person, but he cannot be equal to the Lord. The Lord is described in the Brahma Samhita as infallible, or achyuta, which means that he never forgets himself, even though he is in material contact. Therefore, the Lord and the living entity can never be equal in all respects, even if the living entity is as liberated as Arjuna. Although Arjuna is a devotee of the Lord, he sometimes forgets the nature of the Lord. But by the divine grace, a devotee can at once understand the infallible condition of the Lord, whereas a non-devotee or a demon cannot understand this transcendental nature. Consequently, these descriptions in the Gita cannot be understood by demonic brains. Krishna remembered acts which were performed by him millions of years before. But Arjuna could not, despite the fact that both Krishna and Arjuna are eternal in nature. We may also note herein that a living entity forgets everything due to his change of body, but the Lord remembers because he does not change his Satchidananda body. He is Advaita, which means there is no distinction between his body and himself. Everything in relation to him is spirit, whereas the conditioned soul is different from his material body. And because the Lord's body and self are identical, his position is always different from that of the ordinary living entity, even when he descends to the material platform. The demons cannot adjust themselves to the transcendental nature of the Lord, which the Lord himself explains in the following verse. So, very important information here. So this is the great distinction between Krishna and us. We are infinitesimal and he's infinite. He can never be covered. This word achyuta is important to understand. Prabhupada sometimes gave new meanings to certain English words, one of which is infallible. Infallible means you don't make a mistake. That's the actual meaning, and that certainly applies to Krishna. But the meaning that Prabhupada gives it is you don't fall down. Chuta means down, falling. Achyuta is a name for Krishna. He never falls down. Means he never falls under the sway of the material energy, because he's the master of the material energy. So, but that certainly doesn't apply to us, as we can attest by our present condition. We're anything but achyuta. We are achyuta if we hold fast to achyuta's lotus feet. But when we want to forget Krishna, then we're like the spark coming out of the fire and falling onto the ground. And you know, very quickly it loses its glow and it just becomes a little bit of an ember or even an ant, piece of ash. You know. So our unfortunate tendency is when we turn ourselves away from Krishna. And this turning away is a key kind of metaphor to understand how we got here. It says, Krishna buli se jiva nare bahirmukha ateva tare deha sangsara dukkha. So this is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is speaking to Sanatana Goswami. He's explaining the situation of the conditioned soul. So Krishna buli, forgetting Krishna. Buli means forgetting. Say jiv, the jiva, the living entity. Anadir bahirmukha. From time immemorial, it's so far back that it seems as if it has no beginning. And indeed, it doesn't have no beginning in material time. Because when, and you know, this is where it kind of gets difficult, inconceivable. You can't say when you're talking about the spiritual world, because there's no time. Time doesn't pertain there. There's no past and future. So how can there be a when? But we have to think of it in some way, so that long, long ago, anadi, bahirmukha. Bahirmukha exactly means turning our face to the outside, to the external energy. There's bahir and antar. Antar and bahir. We sing every morning about Lord Nrisingadev, right? Bahir nisingo, hridaye nisingo. Hridaye is the heart. Bahir is outside. So bahir mukha means outside. We turn our back to Krishna. Doesn't it say you're not supposed to turn your back to Krishna? Right? We did that. That's the original sin, if you will. So anadi bahir mukha. And because of that, ataeva deha sangsara deha dukkha. The samsara, the material energy, therefore gives us so many miseries. So as soon as we turn our back from Krishna, we lose the grace, we lose the protection that comes from always, you know, facing Krishna, giving our devotion and love to Krishna. Then you're completely safe. That's what it means to take shelter. The only real shelter in this world is Krishna and his devotees who give Krishna. Otherwise, it's a stone boat. You take shelter of so many things in this world that don't provide real shelter. Ultimately, they all fail, beginning with this body. Body is our original shelter here, but it's obviously very fragile and temporary. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to turn back toward Krishna. Now here, and stay turned back. So here there's some explanation of his appearance as opposed to ours. So many janmani, he says, bahuni me vyatitani janmani. So he calls them births, but they're not births like our births. You know, they're appearances. We call appearance janmash. So the past he had it, he knows all of them, but you do not, O Arjuna. So it's understood, as Prabhupada explains, that Arjuna was with Krishna. He's his eternal friend. So he's with Krishna. But because he takes the role of a conditioned soul, so to speak, he forgets them. Just as we have. I can't remember even one of them, right? But we know from the philosophy, right, that we're affected by them. The reason why we all have different bodies, propensities, we've gone through different experiences, is precisely because of what we did in our previous body, or bodies. You know, it's karma. We're carrying it forward. So this is a very, very strong contrast between our birth and Krishna's birth. So Prabhupada quotes a couple of verses here from the Brahma Samhita, just to indicate the stark difference between Krishna and us. He's Advaitam, he's Achutam, he never falls down, he's non-dual, meaning, and here's another phrase, Deha Dehi Vibhaga Yam Neshure Vijate Krachit. Deha Dehi Vibhaga. So Deha is the body, Dehi is one in the body. Right? This is the first verse you learn. Dehi no smenyada Dehi. So Dehi no, you can either remember that word because it has the word inside. Dehi no, it's the one inside. That's the word for the soul. Especially the soul, when he's in a body, in a material body, he's called the Dehina. So, Dehi, or Dehi, Deha Dehi Vibhagoyam. There's no difference between the inside and the out and the body of Krishna. Krishna's solid spirit. Everything about him, his lotus feet, as we know, he can eat with his eyes. He glances at the offering and eats it. He sees the devotion, you know, and he tastes it that way. So his body is interchangeable. That's the previous verse, Angandi Yasa Sakalendriya Vrittamanti. So he's unlimited, he has unlimited forms, he can expand himself, he's without a beginning, he is the beginning of everything, he's the ancient person, but no, he doesn't have a white beard. You know, he's Navayovana, ever fresh. Because, you know, it's like this. If God is all powerful, right, he can do anything he wants, right? So would you want to get old? Would you want to have a white beard and wrinkles if you were God? It makes no sense. Of course he's going to keep himself at the ideal age, right? 18, 17, 19, whatever it may be. Right? So this Vedeshu Durlabham, now that's an important point. Just by studying the Vedas, just by cogitating, just by meditating or chanting mantras or anything, Durlabham, you can't get him. There has to be Atma Bhakta. There has to be genuine devotion of the soul. And that's really great for us because, you know, I'm not going to become a Sanskrit scholar in this lifetime, you know, or any kind of real scholar, you know, that we have scholars in our movement. Good. But that alone is not the qualification. The simple sweeper, so it's all a question of the Atma Bhakta, the heart and soul. And that's available to every one of us. It all depends on sincerity. So he goes on describing so many wonders of Krishna. And then he makes the point here near the end. Why does the Lord remember? Because he has the Satchit Ananda body. Who can say, raise your hand, what Satchit Ananda means? Bhishma Dev.
Blissful and full knowledge.
Yes. Satchit Ananda. Just a contrast to our body, right? Our body is certainly not sat; it's not eternal, right? Is it full of knowledge? No. Repositories of ignorance. Ananda? Where's the ananda? We're always searching for it, but it's never here. You can't get it in the material world. But we have a Satchidananda body also. It's now covered by this material body. We've forgotten it. And the more we remember Krishna and serve Krishna, the more that we'll awaken to that original body, whose very essence is service to Krishna. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. The Swarup of the living entity, which means our real eternal form that doesn't change deep inside, which we need to discover, is Krishna Das. Now, that includes all of the great devotees we know. You know, Yashoda and Nanda, the gopis, Radharani, all of his cowherd friends, the cows, the trees, the flowers, everything in Goloka Vrindavan is a servant of Krishna. Now, there's a variety. That's why it's so wonderful. Variety of mellows, of ways of service. And those who please Krishna the most, they are the most intimate servants, and that mood of awe and reverence is slackened by yoga maya. The coward friends don't know that Krishna is God. They think they're his just most beloved friend, wonderful friend, because Krishna likes that more. Clearly, if you're rendering service, the better service is that which pleases the served better, right? So he's certainly pleased if one recognizes him as the Almighty Master, but not as much as when you're out of love. Yogamaya will cover that understanding, and what comes out is, as a friend, embracing as a friend, sometimes fighting and conquering Krishna, playing tricks on him, and then being saved by him from some demon. That's a more intimate mellow. What to speak of the father and the mother, or those on that level, like the elder gopis who are able to suckle Krishna. They don't want to think this little boy crawling in the yard, getting all muddy with the cow, dung and everything, he's God. That'll spoil everything. They want to think that he's just this, wonderful, charming little boy who's melting their hearts. And so they can think of him like that. Krishna responds that way. So that's God. Other conceptions of the Supreme don't have that intimacy. You can't do that with Vishnu. He's carrying those four weapons. How are you gonna chastise him if he's got the club in one hand, he's got the chakra in the other? You see? You can only worship and be a humble servant of fear, out of fear. Different mood. It's glorious, but this is more glorious. This is why Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. There and others are all expansions of him. He's supreme. If you understand a little bit of the science of rasa, you'll understand that this is why Krishna is supreme. Is Akala Rasamrita Murti, the very first words of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is our real, essence of the whole mood of this movement is there in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are there. Very first, Akala Rasamrita Murti means that Krishna is the very personification of all the rasas. Means that he can reciprocate. Even Ram doesn't do that. He would not reciprocate with the Dandakaranya Munis who wanted to, love him like Sita, serve him like Sita. Not in his birth. One wife only. You'll have to take birth as gopis, millions of years hence. They did it. So that they could, relate to Krishna. So, Krishna has come many, many times, and he remembers all of them because he doesn't change his body, because he has no external body. And he remembers him, but we cannot, Arjuna did not. Any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
What is it about changing bodies that necessitates forgetting the past?
Well, first of all, we're so minute, really, And the other thing is the trauma of it all. What death does, if we just get knocked on the head, we forget things. But you imagine, leaving your body. Even in this one lifetime, because our mechanism for remembering, we're packed into this body and we're like relating to this world through this Rube Goldberg. Maybe Rube Goldberg doesn't mean anything to you guys. He was a cartoonist back in the 30s and 40s. But he was famous creating, in cartoon form, all of these complicated machines. You've seen them. Where the cat, it'll nudge something, it'll drop down there, and that'll start a chain reaction. Eventually, something will happen. So it's a very complicated contraption by which we're gaining knowledge, and the brain is a fragile thing. I mean, we're knowing ourselves through the mind is constricted through the brain. You know, the mind can exist outside the brain. We know that. There's scientific proof, near-death experiences. But, you know, in our embodied form, it's got this medium. So it's such an imperfect machine for self-awareness or remembering. So any little shock, you know, will lead us to forget. But what's remarkable is the account in the third canto when Kapiladeva describes birth and how the living entity is conditioned. He goes through hellish punishment, you know, he's sinful, and he comes back, okay, he's coming up to species, and he comes up to the human form again. And then after 6.5 months in the womb, he starts dreaming. You know, he doesn't have any external senses, but within the mind, he's remembering his past birth or births and being so regretful. You know, now what have I done? Look at me. You know, I didn't go to Mangalarti. I didn't chant my rounds. I didn't surrender to you. And now I've got myself in a real pickle. So this time for sure, for months he was praying like that, you know. This is described. But the shock of birth makes him forget everything. Again, it's a big traumatic experience. And then, you know, the lights and everything, and you start from scratch and you learn language and everything. And if you're born in a devotee family, that's all to the good. You can learn it. But chances are you won't if you don't have the right background. And so you're back again to being conditioned and forgetting everything. So it's the combination of those two, our infinitesimal nature and the shock of death and rebirth, where we just forget everything. Occasionally, children will remember some things of previous birth, the records of that. But after some time, they forget that. Just like we forget so many things. We're so much absorbed in the present or, you know, the recent past, and you know, that so many things become foggy. You know, I remember certain highlights from years ago, but there's a whole blank spaces. I don't want to remember. All right, let's go on. Ajopi san avyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaropi san. Prakritim svamadhishtaya. Sambhavamyatmamayaya. Now there's an editing that will be appearing in future editions. You can watch it as I read the translation. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, by my internal energy I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Purport. The Lord has spoken about the peculiarity of his birth. Although he may appear like an ordinary person, he remembers everything of his many, many past births, whereas a common man cannot remember what he has done even a few hours before. If someone is asked what he did exactly at the same time one day earlier, it would be very difficult for a common man to answer immediately. He would surely have to dredge his memory to recall what he was doing exactly at the same time one day before. And yet, men often dare claim to be God or Krishna. One should not be misled by such meaningless claims. Then again, the Lord explains his prakriti, or his form. Prakriti means nature as well as sarup, or one's own form. The Lord says that he appears in his own body. He does not change his body, as the common living entity changes from one body to another. The conditioned soul may have one kind of body in the present birth, but he has a different body in the next birth. In the material world, the living entity has no fixed body, but transmigrates from one body to another. The Lord, however, does not do so. Whenever he appears, he does so in the same original body by his internal potency. In other words, Krishna appears in this material world in his original eternal form, with two hands holding a flute. He appears exactly in his eternal body, uncontaminated by this material world. Although he appears in the same transcendental body and is Lord of the universe, it still appears that he takes his birth like an ordinary living entity. And although his body does not deteriorate, like a material body, it still appears that Lord Krishna grows from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth. But astonishingly enough, he never goes beyond youth. At the time of the Battle of Kurukshetra, he had many grandchildren at home. Or in other words, he had sufficiently aged by material calculations. Still, he looked just like a young man, 20 or 25 years old. We never see a picture of Krishna in old age because he never grows old like us. although he is the oldest person in the whole creation, past, present, and future. Neither his body nor his intelligence ever deteriorates or changes. Therefore, it is clear that in spite of his being in the material world, he is the same unborn eternal form of bliss and knowledge, changeless in his transcendental body and intelligence. Factually, his appearance and disappearance are like the sun's rising, moving before us, and then disappearing from our eyesight. When the sun is out of sight, we think that the sun has set. And when the sun is before our eyes, we think that the sun is on the horizon. Actually, the sun is always in its fixed position, but owing to our defective, insufficient senses, we calculate the appearance and disappearance of the sun in the sky. And because Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are completely different from that of any ordinary common living entity, it is evident that he is eternal, blissful knowledge by his internal potency, and he is never contaminated by material nature. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unborn, yet he still appears to take his birth in multi-manifestations. The Vedic supplementary literatures also confirm that even though the Lord appears to be taking his birth, he is still without change of body. In the Bhagavatam, he appears before his mother as Narayan, with four hands and the decorations of the six kinds of full opulences. His appearance in his original eternal form is his causeless mercy bestowed upon the living entities so that they can concentrate on the Supreme Lord as he is, and not on mental concoctions or imaginations, which the impersonalist wrongly thinks the Lord's forms to be. The word maya, or atma-maya, refers to the Lord's causeless mercy, according to the Vishvakosh dictionary. The Lord is conscious of all of his previous appearances and disappearances, but a common living entity forgets everything about his past body as soon as he gets another body. He is the Lord of all living entities because he performs wonderful and superhuman activities while he is on this earth. Therefore, the Lord is always the same absolute truth and is without differentiation between his form and self, or between his quality and body. A question may now be raised as to why the Lord appears and disappears in this world. This is explained in the next verse. So, another very important verse. This word avyaya, I've determined that this word appears most often in the Bhagavad Gita, as any word. It's in this verse, avyaya. Now, avyaya applies both to the Lord and to the soul, as a soul. But, unfortunately, it doesn't provide to our bodies. And since we're identifying with the body, we're anything but avyaya in this body. And the very word, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, the word vyadi, which means disease, is related to this vyaya word. So avyaya means no disease, no deterioration, you see. So Krishna says, although I am avyaya, I never deteriorate myself, and although I am the Lord of all beings, I still appear by my internal energy repeatedly. And Prabhupada puts in every millennium. That's coming from the next verse, or the two verses hence. Yuge, yuge. So again, why does he do so? He does so out of his mercy, out of his compassion, so that we can relate to him, we can learn the Bhagavad Gita, and we can regain our own avyaya nature, which we've lost. We're identifying with this very fallible body, and therefore we never can be peaceful in this body. The point made here is that, you know, the body is always changing. And so our sense of self is always changing. If we're identifying with the body, then we're constantly changing our understanding of who we are. Every child knows. You can remember how you grew up as a child. You know, a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old. It's all like a different world there. You know, and then you go to school. You know, I'm a blue bird, yellow bird, red bird. You know, whatever it is. They're always kind of put these designations on you, according to your score, according to your height, right? And according to your color. I remember I grew up in the 50s and 60s. This was before the Civil Rights Movement. So we had a lot of Negroes, we used to call them in those times. And they were, for whatever reason, slower than most of the whites. So we had one black Negro in my class, and we had maybe two or three whites in the Negro class. They were called the A's, and we were called the Z's. You know, to kind of encourage them. But you identify with that. you know? Oh, yeah, you may not say it, but I'm a slow, you know? I'm fast, I'm smart, you know? I used to be really proud because I was smart, you know? So, but as you go on, that changes. You identify. Then I became, in college, in high school even, I was a resistor against the war. You know, that was my new identity. I wasn't just a smarty pants kid. I was draft resistor. You know, and so you identify with it. Now I'm 20 years old. Now I'm 23 years old. And as you go on, you know, your ideas are changing. Your subtle body is also changing, very importantly. Your relationships are changing. Where you live, changing. Your height is changing. Your weight is changing. Everything's changing. You know, this is why people, they hate to be fat. You know, me, I'm fat. You know, I don't want to be fat. You're not fat. You're not thin. You know, you're just a spirit soul. But there's so much in the bodily concept of life, and that, you know, that's not ideal. It's, you know, so it's a depressing thought. You know, but all of that, all of these designations, these are called upadis. These are called upadis. These are designations on the body, and they're constantly changing. But we always have a certain set of them that we embrace as us. You know, it has nothing to do with our understanding of the soul. That's completely covered. So bhakti is meant to free us from these upadis. That's why it's one of the definitions of bhakti is sarva upadi, vinirmuktam, being free from all of these false designations. And tatparatvena nirmalam. Nirmalam means pure, completely pure, free of those, that cleanse from those designations. Rishikena rishikesha sevanam. A very simple definition. With the senses, to serve the master of the senses. It's such a revolutionary concept that we are trying to serve our own senses, or we're making our senses serve us. Right? Everything is self-centered. We identify with the senses. This is my tongue. This is my eyes and ears. And I'm looking. I'm always searching for those things which please the senses. Right? So we're servants of the senses. We're not serving the master of the senses. We're serving the senses themselves. You know, that's not bhakti. That's called maya. So Rishikena, Rishikesha Sevanam. One of Krishna's names is Rishika Isha. Rishika is the senses, Isha is the master. So that's a revolutionary concept that requires such great training because it goes directly against the false ego. We've embraced this false ego, you know, this identification with the body and the things related to the body. So therefore, there's so much to do in devotional service, using the senses for Krishna, both the knowledge acquiring and the active senses. You know, we're meant to hear the spiritual sound. We're meant to chant the spiritual sound. We're meant to see the beautiful deity. We're meant to read the books. We're meant to use our hands and our feet for service and our intelligence for figuring out better ways to spread Krishna consciousness. And if we follow the program as it's been given to us, sometimes it grates against us. Sometimes it's not something we spontaneously want to do. That's understood. But we should know that this is the actual cure. So that at a certain point, we're always engaging the senses and the mind and intelligence in the service of the master of the senses, mind and intelligence. And that's called bhakti. So Krishna comes to teach that. Here, you know, describes his birth. He doesn't age like us. Now, he does grow. You know, he doesn't do this in the spiritual world, but when he comes to Bhoma Vrindavan, that's the earthly Vrindavan, he actually seems to take birth, you know, from Devaki, and he grows up in Vrindavan as a little child and enacts these wonderful pastimes that we read about in the Bhagavatam. But he doesn't age, you know, beyond adolescence. You know, he becomes a youth, and that's it. Very rare. Okay, I don't want to go over again. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.